This is Audible.
Zondervan presents Boundaries in Dating, How Healthy Choices Grow Healthy Relationships by Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. John Townsend. Read by Jonathan Peterson. Why Dating? A few years back, I was doing a seminar for singles in the Midwest when the question came from the floor, Dr. Cloud, what is the biblical position on dating? At first, I thought I had misheard the question, so I asked the woman to repeat it, and the question came out the same as the first time. What do you mean, the biblical position? I asked. Well, do you think that dating is a biblical thing to do? The woman explained. Once I heard her question, I thought she was kidding, but I soon realized she was not. I had heard people ask about the biblical position on capital punishment or euthanasia, but never on dating. I don't think the Bible gives a position on dating, I said. Dating is an activity that people do, and as with a lot of other things, the Bible does not talk about it. What the Bible does talk about is being a loving, honest, growing person in whatever you do. So, I would have to say that the biblical position on dating has much more to do with the person you are and are becoming than whether or not you date. The biblical position on dating would be to date in a holy way. In fact, God grows people up through dating relationships in the same way that He grows them up in many other life activities. The question is not whether or not you are dating. The questions are more along the lines of who are you in your dating and who are you becoming in your dating? What is the fruit of your dating for you and for the people that you date? How are you treating them? What are you learning? And a host of other issues that the Bible is very clear about. It's mainly about your character growth and how you treat people. So you think it's okay to date? She pressed. Of course I do, but it is only okay to date within biblical guidelines, which, by the way, are not burdensome. They will save your life and help you to make sure you end up with a good person to marry, I said, chuckling on the inside about how often Christians want a rule. I thought this was the end of it until the same question kept coming up around the country whenever I would speak to singles. Over and over again, I was asked if dating were an okay thing to do or not. I was curious about why people were asking the same question. So, one day, I asked where these questions were coming from. I was told that a movement was arising from a book called I Kissed Dating Goodbye by Joshua Harris. The premise of the book is that dating is not a good idea, and many people were giving it up. As I continued to investigate, the movement went even further than the book in some circles. Many Christians were saying that dating was sinful in and of itself. Others were at least feeling as if people who were still dating were less spiritual than those who didn't. It was becoming the Christian thing to forego dating. I thought at first that this was just in some circles, but the more I traveled around, I was hearing it all over the country. So we read I Kissed Dating Goodbye, and in this chapter we will share some of our reactions. We strongly disagree with the idea that all people should give up dating for several reasons. But before we get into the specifics, we want to validate the reasons behind this movement. No one would take such a stance against dating without good reason, and the reason people are giving up dating seems to be this: pain, disillusionment, and detrimental effects to their spiritual life. In other words, dating has not helped them to grow, find a mate, or become a more spiritual person. So it makes sense to kiss it goodbye. And we empathize with this pain. As we have seen over the years working with many singles and being single for a long time ourselves, both of us were well into our 30s before we married, dating can cause a lot of hurt and suffering. Many people become disillusioned in the process, and they feel like they do not know how to make it work. They experience heartbreak. They repeatedly pick the wrong type. They can't find the right type. Or they find the right type, and they don't like him or her as much as the wrong type. They have trouble integrating their spiritual life into dating. And they question what to do with physical attraction and moral limits, as well as wonder when to move from casual dating to a more significant relationship. For many people, the pain and suffering of dating becomes too much, and they are ready for an alternative. And out of this motivation, we concur with the followers of the No Dating Movement and its proponents. The pain of dating is not worth it if it does not lead to anything good. We understand Mr. Harris's motive for writing this book, but we disagree with his conclusion. While we agree that the hurt must stop, we don't think that dating is the problem. We think people are. In the same way that cars don't kill people, drunk drivers do, dating does not hurt people, but dating in out-of-control ways does. Paul's advice to the Colossians is sound. Since you died with Christ to the basic principles of this world, why, as though you still belong to it, do you submit to its rules? Do not handle, do not taste, do not touch. These are all destined to perish with use, because they are based on human commands and teachings. Such regulations indeed have an appearance of wisdom, with their self-imposed worship, their false humility, and their harsh treatment of the body, but they lack any value in restraining sensual indulgence. Colossians 2:20-23. Paul cautioned the Colossians that making rules and abstaining from certain practices would never develop the maturity they needed to live life. Human problems are matters of the heart, the soul, one's orientation toward God, and a whole host of other maturity issues. As Paul says, avoiding certain things you could engage in destructively does not cure your basic problem of immaturity, which is internal, not external. You may be immature and not able to handle dating, so you abstain from dating. But unless you do something to grow up, you will still be immature, and you will take that immaturity right into marriage. Avoiding dating isn't the way to cure the problems encountered in dating. The cure is the same as the Bible's cure for all of life's problems, and that is spiritual growth leading to maturity. Learning how to love, follow God, be honest and responsible, treat others as you would want to be treated, develop self-control, and build a fulfilling life will ensure better dating. Before we tell you in this book how to date well, we want to point out some reasons why we think you shouldn't kiss dating goodbye, and some more reasons why we think dating can be great. In his book in the chapter, The 7 Habits of Highly Defective Dating, Joshua Harris talks about the following negative tendencies of dating. 1. Dating leads to intimacy, but not necessarily to commitment. 2. Dating tends to skip the friendship stage of a relationship. 3. Dating often mistakes a physical relationship for love. 4. Dating often isolates a couple from other vital relationships. 5. Dating, in many cases, distracts young adults from their primary responsibility of preparing for the future. 6. Dating can cause discontentment with God's gift of singleness. And 7. Dating creates an artificial environment for evaluating another person's character. All of these problem scenarios are created by people and the way that they date. Throughout the rest of this book, we will address each one of these by looking at the lack of appropriate structure within, among other things, a person's character, support system, values, and relationship with God. In other words, a lack of boundaries. Each one of these scenarios has to do with some aspects of character immaturity, such as fusion, dependency, or self-centeredness. A loss of boundaries occurs when an immature person gives up all of his or her structure, internal and external, and fuses with an ideal, a person, or something else to avoid maturing. The immature, idealized falling in love that we have all seen as destructive is always a problem in which someone needs to be brought back to reality. If someone has this tendency, they need character and spiritual growth to mature enough to face life and relationships in a more balanced way. And we think that God can provide that. Throughout the book, we talk about all of these problems and the boundaries that will cure them. God gives us principles to guide us in life. Because we can trust His ways, We are free to grow and develop a life as we mature. We do not have to avoid life or maturity. Harris builds his case on one example after another of selfish gratification of passion at the expense of another person, or of heartbreak, or of immature, dependent, addictive romance. None of those situations are caused by dating, but by the immaturity of the people involved. We all know many situations where more mature and godly teens, young adults, and older adults dated in very growth-producing and mature ways, and they are very grateful for the experience. Harris's logic seems to be, person A dated person B. Person A or B or both got hurt. Dating is bad. This is a little like saying because there is divorce, no one should get married. Or because there are car accidents, no one should drive. Many singles date very responsibly, and they learn and grow through the experience. Both parties are the better for it, and they are more prepared for a later commitment. Harris, however, is right about this. Some people should not date, at least for a while. Just as some people should not drive, or should not even drink, or should not do other things the Bible leaves as free territory, some people should not date. The biblical principle is that these people might have a weakness or immaturity that could cause them to stumble, and for this reason, refraining from a certain activity is best. One internationally known youth worker I consulted confirmed this. He said, "Refraining from dating is probably a good idea for a small percent of the teenagers we work with. The rest need to be dating and learning how to handle all that dating brings up in the maturity cycle." This is what we think as well. Not dating is a good idea for a few people. People who are vulnerable to destructive romantic fusion, who are being used by others, or who are avoiding maturity. Not dating is a good idea to give these people an opportunity to grow. But for others, we think dating can be a very good experience. And so does Harris. He just doesn't call it dating. He says that a couple should spend time with each other to see if they are right for one another before they go forward into marriage. But he distinguishes that from dating because from the first date, the couple is investigating marriage. Up until this point, there was friendship. Not a bad plan, we believe. Get to know someone well before you commit to marriage. We also believe that dating offers this opportunity and more. Here are a few of the benefits we see in dating. 1. Dating gives people the opportunity to learn about themselves, others, and relationships in a safe context. When done properly, dating is an incubator time of discovering the opposite sex, one's own sexual feelings, moral limits, one's need for relationship skills, and one's tastes in people. But dating must be done in the proper context. A single person must date within a community of people who care about him or her. For teens, this context is their parents, friends, youth group, youth pastor, coaches, and the like. Dating gives people a place to grow and learn in the safety of people who can help them develop. I told one youth worker who believed in the no dating movement that I thought he was robbing teens of needed input and coaching if he encouraged them to not date. I would rather see teens learn in a situation where they have guidance and have an opportunity to mature before making a marriage commitment than see them make a commitment and then have to figure all of that out later. The same is true for older singles. Their friends, pastors, and community should provide support for their dating lives. This gives them a place to grow until they are ready for marriage. 2. Dating provides a context to work through issues. Ask some happily married people how they would have fared if they had married their first boyfriend or girlfriend. We have all seen it 1,000 times. People's first choices of who they are attracted to may not be so great. Dating offers people a place to find out what they think they value in a person might not be what they value in the long term. They may find that what they are attracted to is fleeting and can even be destructive. Some of these attractions can even take on spiritual overtones. I have heard many times that someone was attracted to another person's spiritual maturity and character. They thought the person was great. But after they started to date, they got to know him or her a lot better and closer. And they found out that what looked so good in a casual relationship did not hold water in a closer relationship over time. I was talking to a woman who had grown up with an overpowering father and who had a strong dislike for this domination. She was attracted to men who were kind and soft, qualities her father did not possess. She ended up marrying her first boyfriend after dating for only a short while. He was a very nice and kind man, but because she feared a man's power, a very passive one. She was sorry that she did not learn earlier about her tendency to idealize passivity. Had she dated her husband for a while, she would have known what she was getting into and what he was like in a real relationship. Lots of people look good until there is a real relationship day after day. 3. Dating helps build relationship skills. Intimate relationships take a lot of work and a lot of skills. Many people do not come to the table of adulthood having learned these relationship skills in their families or other places. But when they begin dating, they find out that they possess some serious insecurities, or they lack certain relationship skills, such as communication, vulnerability, trust, assertiveness, honesty, self-sacrifice, and listening. In their dating relationships, they become aware of their immaturity and are able to find out what they need to work on before they are ready for a significant relationship. In addition, dating gives a person the opportunity to learn about relationship itself and how they function in a relationship. It can be an enormous time of growth and discovery. 4. Dating can heal and repair. I ran into a man I hadn't seen in some time and was surprised to find that he was happily married to someone other than the woman he had been with when I had last seen him. When I asked him about his former girlfriend, he replied, "Oh, we're great friends, and I'm so grateful to God for the role she played in my life." "What do you mean?" I asked. For a while, I thought she was the one, but God had other plans long-term for both of us. I do believe, however, that he brought us together for a season to teach us both a lot about ourselves and to bring about some healing. I had had so much hurt in the past, and she was so accepting and nurturing. Her love was very important to my becoming someone who could love again. Although I now know she was not the right one for me to marry, our relationship was really good for both of us and prepared us for future relationships. God uses relationships to heal us and to change us. Although we are not suggesting that dating be the primary place that someone seeks healing, this is a horrible idea, it is a place where good things happen in people's souls. People benefit from good relationships. People can have good dating relationships where they learn, are healed, grow, and are stretched, even when the relationship does not lead to marriage. It has value in a person's life. 5. Dating is relational and has value in and of itself. Joshua Harris says that people seek their own gratification in dating. While some people certainly use others selfishly in the dating realm, others enjoy getting to know another person, and they give and receive in a godly way, just not in a way that leads to marriage. Getting to know someone, spending time with him, and sharing things with him is intimacy. This knowing another person deeply is love. It is relationship, and it is holy and good. But in dating, it is not complete. People who are not married do not give parts of themselves. They restrain from sexual union, for example. But their other sharing has real value and is a wonderful thing for no other reason than the love and relationship itself. It is its own end. God has said that love, and not just married love, is the fulfillment of the entire law. When two singles love each other, give to each other, and share something in life, although the relationship has limits of both body and heart, it has value as well. 6. dating lets someone learn what he or she likes in the opposite sex. We mentioned a woman earlier who would have done well to find out in dating that nice was not all it was cracked up to be. But there are other things people need to learn that are not based in this kind of pain. In her case, she was making up for her father's problems. Other people just do not know what kind of person they might really like and be good with. Everyone has some ideals and some natural attractions. Some of those may be good, and some may be rooted in sickness. Not everyone knows what people he likes and what people are good for him. What is it like to spend a lot of time with a driver personality? For some, it is heaven. For others, hell. What is it like to be around an intellectual person day after day? For some, it may be very stimulating. For others, very dry and boring. And we could go on and on. What we sometimes think we like is not what would really be good for us long term, but we have to find this out. Dating gives people a context to meet and spend time with a wide variety of people. They can find out what they like, what they need, and what is good for them. 7. Dating gives a context to learn sexual self-control and other delay of gratification. Good dating allows people the opportunity to have a relationship and forego sex. This delaying of gratification teaches something very valuable for marriage. The relationship and doing the best for the other person is more important than self-gratification and sexual expression. Some married couples do not know how to relate, and one or both use sex to substitute for relationship. Dating within God's limits makes people learn how to relate to one another while denying sexual expression. Dating, done correctly, teaches self-control and delay of gratification. Both of those are prerequisites for any marriage to work. Dating can be done poorly and can lead to hurt and pain. Dating can be done well and can lead to wonderful fruits in the life of the teen and the adult single. Boundaries in dating is designed to help you find the secrets of dating successfully and avoid the pitfalls of dating poorly. If you will take this book seriously, seek God as deeply as you know how, establish a healthy community of friends to support you in the process, then dating can be something wonderful indeed. It can be fun, spiritually fulfilling, and growth-producing. Keep your boundaries and enjoy the process. Get involved in life, but remember God's boundaries and the way that He wants you to live a fulfilled but holy life. It was expressed well in Solomon's advice to the young man, which also applies to young women. Rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of young manhood, and follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. Yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. Ecclesiastes 11:9. Dating can be a great time of life, but it must be balanced with God's boundaries of what is good. We hope that this book helps you find that safety, fulfillment, growth, and freedom. Part 1. You and Your Boundaries. Chapter 1. Why Boundaries in Dating. So what do I do? Set a bomb underneath his chair? Heather exploded, only partly in jest. She was having lunch with her best friend, Julie. The conversation focused on her ongoing frustration with Todd, Heather's boyfriend for the past year. Heather cared deeply for him and was ready to pursue marriage. Though he was loving, responsible, and fun, Todd had shown no sign of making any real commitment to the relationship. The couple enjoyed being together, yet any time Heather tried to talk about getting serious, Todd would make a joke or skate around the issue. At 33, Todd valued his freedom and saw no reason for anything in his life to change. Heather's outburst was a response to something Julie had said. You really need to help Todd get moving forward. Heather's words were tinted with frustration, hurt, and a good deal of discouragement. Frustration because she and Todd seemed to be on different tracks. Hurt because her love felt unrequited, and discouraged because she had invested so much of her heart, time, and energy into the relationship. For the past year, Heather had made Todd a high emotional priority in her life. She had given up activities she enjoyed. She had given up relationships she valued. She had tried to become the kind of person she thought Todd would be attracted to. And now it looked like this investment was going nowhere. No kids allowed. Welcome to dating. If you have been in this unique type of relationship, you are probably familiar with Heather and Todd's scenario. Two people are genuinely attracted to each other and start going out. They are hopeful that the relationship will become something special that will lead to marriage and a lifelong soulmate. Things look good for a while, but somehow something breaks down between them, causing heartache, frustration, and loneliness. And more often than not, the scenario repeats itself in other relationships down the line. Some people blame dating itself for all of this, thinking that it's not a healthy activity. They would rather find an alternative, such as group friendships, until two people have selected each other to court exclusively. Though dating has its difficulties, we would not take this view. We believe in dating. We did it a lot personally, having been single a combined total of 75 years. And we think it offers lots of good things, such as opportunities to grow personally and learn how to relate to people, for starters. However, dating does have its risks. That is why we say, no kids allowed. That doesn't mean teens shouldn't date, but it does mean one's maturity is very important here. By its very nature, dating is experimental, with little commitment initially, so someone can get out of a relationship without having to justify himself much. Putting lots of emotional investment into a relationship can be dangerous. Thus, dating works best between two responsible people. Problems in freedom and responsibility. This book is not about the nature of dating, however. You cannot do a lot about that. Rather, we are writing about the problems people have in how they conduct their dating lives. There is a great deal you can do about that. Simply put, many of the struggles people experience in dating relationships are, at heart, caused by some problem in the areas of freedom and responsibility. By freedom, we mean your ability to make choices based on your values rather than choosing out of fear or guilt. Free people make commitments because they feel it's the right thing to do, and they are wholehearted about it. By responsibility, we mean your ability to execute your tasks in keeping the relationship healthy and loving, as well as being able to say no to things you shouldn't be responsible for. Responsible people shoulder their part of the dating relationship, but they don't tolerate harmful or inappropriate behavior. Dating is ultimately about love. People seek it through dating. When they find it and it matures, they often make deep commitments to each other. Freedom and responsibility are necessary for love to develop in dating. When two individuals allow each other freedom and take ownership of the relationship, they are creating an environment for love to grow and mature. Freedom and responsibility create a safe and secure environment for a couple to love, trust, explore, and deepen their experience of each other. Actually, these two elements are necessary for any successful relationship, not just dating. Marriage, friendship, parenting, and business connections depend on freedom and responsibility in order for the attachment to flourish. God designed love so that there can be no fear, loss of freedom, in love. For perfect love casts out fear. 1 John 4:18. We are to speak the truth in love to each other. Ephesians 4:15. Taking responsibility to protect love by confronting problems. We believe that healthy boundaries are the key to preserving freedom, responsibility, and ultimately love in your dating life. Establishing and keeping good limits can do a great deal to not only cure a bad relationship, but make a good one better. So, before we take a look at the ways that dating problems arise from freedom and responsibility conflicts, let's take a brief look at what boundaries are and how they function in your dating relationships. What are boundaries? You may not be familiar with the term boundary. For some people, Boundaries may bring up images of walls, barriers to intimacy, or even selfishness. Yet that is not the case, especially in the dating arena. If you understand what boundaries are and do, they can be one of the most helpful tools in your life to develop love, responsibility, and freedom. Let's take a look at what a boundary is, its functions and purpose, and some examples. A property line. Simply put, a boundary is a property line. Just as a physical fence marks out where your yard ends and your neighbor's begins, a personal boundary distinguishes what is your emotional or personal property and what belongs to someone else. You can't see your own boundary. However, you can tell it is there when someone crosses it, when another person tries to control you, tries to get too close to you, or asks you to do something you don't think is right. You should feel some sense of protest. Your boundary has been crossed. The functions of boundaries. Boundaries serve two important functions. First, they define us. Boundaries show what we are and are not, what we agree and disagree with, what we love and hate. God has many clear boundaries. He loves the world, John 3:16. He loves cheerful givers, 2 Corinthians 9:7. He hates haughty eyes and a lying tongue, Proverbs 6:16-17. As people made in His image, we also are to be honest and truthful about what we are and are not. Dating goes much better when you are defined. When you are clear about your values, preferences, and morals, you solve many problems before they start. For example, a woman may tell a guy she is going out with that she is serious about her spiritual life and desires that in people she is close to. She is letting him know about something that defines her, and it is out front between them, so that he will know who she is. The second function of boundaries is that they protect us. Boundaries keep good things in and bad things out. When we don't have clear limits, we can expose ourselves to unhealthy and destructive influences and people. Prudent people see danger and hide from it, Proverbs 27:12. For example, a man and a woman who are getting closer in their relationship may want to set some limits on dating other people so as to protect each other's hearts from unnecessary harm. Boundaries protect by letting others know what you will and will not tolerate. Examples of boundaries. There are several kinds of limits we can set and use in dating, all depending on the circumstances. Here are a few. Words. Telling someone no and being honest about your disagreement. The truth. Bringing reality to a problem. Distance. Allowing time or physical space between two people to protect, or as a consequence, for irresponsible behavior. Other people. Using supportive friends to help keep a limit. Sometimes you will use these boundaries to simply let your date know your heart. I am sensitive and wanted you to know that, so that we can be aware that I might get hurt easily. At other times, you may need to use boundaries to confront a problem and protect yourself or the relationship. I will not go as far as you want sexually, and if you continue pushing, I will not see you again. Either way, boundaries give you freedom and choices. What's inside your boundaries? Remember that boundaries are a fence protecting your property. In dating, your property is your own soul. Boundaries surround the life God has given you to maintain and mature, so that you can become the person He created you to be. Here are some of the contents of yourself that boundaries define and protect. Your love, your deepest capacity to connect and trust. Your emotions, your need to own your feelings and not be controlled by someone else's feelings. Your values, your need to have your life reflect what you care about most deeply. Your behaviors, your control over how you act in your dating relationship. Your attitudes, your stances and opinions about yourself and your date. You and only you are responsible for what is inside your boundaries. If someone else is controlling your love, emotions, or values, they are not the problem. Your inability to set limits on their control is the problem. Boundaries are the key to keeping your very soul safe, protected, and growing. You will find many, many examples and situations in this book about how to apply boundary principles in your dating life. Just remember that you are not being mean when you say no. Instead, you may be saving yourself or even the relationship from harm. How boundary problems show themselves. There are lots of ways that dating suffers when freedom and responsibility are not appropriately present. Here are a few of them. Loss of freedom to be oneself. Sometimes one person will give up her identity and lifestyle to keep a relationship together. Then, when her true feelings emerge, the other person doesn't like who she really is, having never been exposed to her real self. Heather, in the introductory illustration, had lost some of her freedom in this way. Being with the wrong person. When we have well-developed boundaries, we are more drawn to healthy, growing people. We are clear about what we will tolerate and what we will love. Good boundaries run off the wackos and attract people who are into responsibility and relationship. But when our boundaries are unclear or undeveloped, we run the risk of allowing people inside who shouldn't be there. Dating from inner hurt rather than our values. Boundaries have so much to do with our values, what we believe and live out in life. When our boundaries are clear, our values can dictate what kinds of people fit the best. But often, people with poor boundaries have some soul work to do, and they unknowingly attempt to work it out in dating. Instead of picking people because of their values, they react to their inner struggles and choose in some devastating ways. For example, the woman with controlling parents may be drawn to controlling men. Conversely, another woman with the same sort of background may react the opposite way, picking passive and compliant men so as to never be controlled. Either way, the hurt part inside is picking, not the values. Not dating. Sadly, some people who really want to be dating are on the sidelines, wondering if they will ever find anyone or if anyone will find them. This is often caused by boundary conflicts, when people withdraw to avoid hurt and risk and end up empty-handed. Doing too much in the relationship. Many people with boundary problems overstep their bounds and don't know when to stop giving of themselves. They will put their lives and hearts on hold for someone, only to find out that the other person was willing to take all that but never really wanted to deeply commit. Good boundaries help you know how much to give and when to stop giving. Freedom without responsibility. Freedom must always be accompanied by responsibility. When one person enjoys the freedom of dating and takes no responsibility for himself, problems occur. Someone who is having his cake and eating it too in his dating relationship is in this category. This is Todd's situation. He enjoyed Heather but didn't want to take any responsibility to develop the relationship, though a great deal of time had passed. Control issues. More often than not, one person wants to get serious sooner than another. Sometimes in this situation, the more serious person attempts to rein in the other person by manipulation, guilt, domination, and intimidation. Love has become secondary, and control has become primary. Not taking responsibility to say no. This describes the nice guy who allows disrespect and poor treatment by his date, and either minimizes the reality that he is being mistreated or simply hopes that one day she will stop. He disowns his responsibility to set a limit on bad things happening to him. Sexual impropriety. Couples often have difficulty keeping appropriate physical limits. They either avoid taking responsibility for the issue, or one person is the only one with the breaks, or they ignore the deeper issues that are driving the activity. There are many more ways that dating can become misery because of freedom and responsibility problems. We will go over many of them in the book. And, as you will see, understanding and applying boundaries in the right ways can make a world of difference in how you approach the dating arena. In the next chapter, we will look at the first and foremost boundary line of any relationship: truth. Takeaway tips. Dating involves risks, and boundaries help you navigate those risks. Boundaries are your property lines, which define and protect you. Learn to value what your boundaries protect, such as your emotions, values, behaviors, and attitudes. Boundaries help you be yourself instead of losing yourself in someone else. You want the person you date to take responsibility for his life as you do. Good boundaries will help you choose better quality people because they help you become a better person. Chapter 2. Require and Embody Truth. I went to a conference a few years back on working with character disorders, and the instructor was giving a list of priorities to psychologists who treat them. Character disorder is a catch-all term, but one way of defining it is people who do not take ownership and responsibility for their lives. I will never forget what the instructor said about the number one priority, other than protecting your personal safety, in treating character disorders. As soon as there is any kind of deception, stop everything. If you are trying to help someone and he is lying to you in some way, there is no relationship. The whole thing is a farce, and you should not go any further in trying to help the person until you settle the issue of deception. There are no other issues at that point except that one. Trust is everything in a helping relationship, and when it is broken, it becomes the only issue to work on. Either fix that or end the relationship. Where there is deception, there is no relationship. It was wise training and good counsel from a very experienced leader in the field. 35 years of practice had taught him, through experience, that where there is deception, there is no relationship. Truthfulness is everything. While essential in the therapeutic relationship, honesty is the bedrock of dating and marriage as well. Standing on quicksand. I was listening to a client tell her story the other day. Her marriage was torn asunder by an affair. The interesting thing, though, was that the marriage was not ripped by the affair, but by the lying. The husband had confessed some things to his wife, and she was devastated. They separated for several months while she went through all of the pain associated with that kind of betrayal. Then, after all of that, she decided that she wanted to reconcile and get back together. She was softening and opening up, and he was repentant. Then she found out that he had not told her the whole story the first time, and that things were worse than she had been led to believe. The second deception was worse than the first. It was like the affair had happened all over again, except this time there was lying on top of the first lying and deception of it all. It was more than she could take. Feeling like she was standing on quicksand, she started the separation all over again. Her situation reminded me again of the wise psychiatrist's words, "Where there is deception, there is no relationship." I have seen deception undermine relationships in the areas of finances, work performance, substance use, and many other topics. The context changes from relationship to relationship, but the lying and deception are just as destructive no matter what topic someone is lying about. The real problem is that when you are with someone who is deceptive, you never know what reality is. You are not standing on firm ground, and the ground can shift at any moment. As one woman said, it makes you question everything. Deception in dating. There are many different ways to deceive someone in the world of dating. Let's look at some of the more common ones. Deception about your relationship. Karen liked Matt a lot, but after a few months of dating, she realized that the relationship was not going anywhere long term. She liked having him around, but Matt was getting more serious than she was in his feelings for her. He had stopped going out with other people and was beginning to treat her like a real girlfriend. At first, she was uncomfortable with his seriousness, but she tried to ignore the feeling. After all, she was having fun and did not see any harm in continuing to go out. But he was getting more and more affectionate, and there were other signs that he was getting hooked. The more he did, the more she denied her awareness that she was not being straightforward. What's the harm? She convinced herself. Then, one night, they were watching late-night TV when he leaned over and kissed her. He said softly, "I love you." Karen felt her whole body go stiff. But she kissed him back and acted as if nothing was wrong. A little while later, she said she was tired and wanted to go to bed. She bid him good night, and he left. Matt left on a high. He felt as if they had entered a new level of relationship. He had plans for their future and was a changed man. That night, he fell asleep dreaming of being together. Where do you think the relationship went from there? There were two options. One was that Karen could call Matt the next day and say, "We need to talk. Last night when you said you loved me, it made me uncomfortable. I don't think that we are having the same sort of feelings for each other. I don't think that we are headed in the same direction, and I think we should just be friends." Unfortunately, that is not what happened. She ignored her discomfort and continued to go out as if nothing was different. He continued to fall for her, and she continued to allow him to do so. He took her to wonderful places and events, gave her lots of time and attention, and pursued her, all along the way thinking that they were boyfriend and girlfriend. And she allowed it. She enjoyed being with him, but had to ignore the slow split that was developing inside of her between the way she was acting and the way that she knew she was feeling. But, she told herself, he really is fun to be around. What's the harm in continuing to date? And she did for a while, until she wanted to move on, and she felt that Matt was somewhat in the way. So, she finally had to tell him that she wanted to stop dating. She was not feeling like the relationship was going anywhere, she told him. Matt was devastated. He could not believe it. One day they were an item, and the next they were finished. How could this have happened? Disillusioned, he did not date again for a long time. Many singles have found themselves on one side or the other of Matt and Karen's situation. Either side is painful, but certainly Matt had the worse end of things. He was being deceived into thinking that things were a certain way when they were not, and his heart was responding to what he perceived reality to be. In the end, he was really hurt. Hurt, and often loss, comes with dating. Losing a love or the hope of love is part of the dating situation. But while losing a love that one desires is almost inevitable in the dating life at some time or another, losing one's trust in the opposite sex does not have to happen if people are honest with one another. As Paul says, "Therefore, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to his neighbor, for we are all members of one body." Ephesians 4:25. It is one thing to have loved and lost. It is another thing to have loved and been lied to. There is nothing wrong with dating someone, enjoying their company, and finding out where a relationship is going to go. That is almost a definition of the dating circumstance. But as soon as someone is sure that dating is not going where another person thinks or hopes that it is, that person has a responsibility to tell the other one clearly and honestly. Anything less is deceitful and harmful. Do not lead someone on or allow them to deceive themselves by anything that you are doing. Matt would have been a lot better off if he had been hurt earlier, as soon as Karen knew what was happening. That might have increased his trust of women. But the opposite happened. Deception about being friends. The same thing can happen in the opposite direction. While Karen was acting like a girlfriend when in reality she was just a friend, there are those who are deceptive about their true intentions while they are acting like a friend. These are people who have a secret crush and do all sorts of things for someone. Oftentimes they go way out of their way to help or minister to someone, but all along the way they have ulterior motives. Then, when the target does not return the affection, they feel hurt and act like a victim, as if the target had done something horrible. All along the way, the target thought that they were just friends. There is nothing wrong with being friends and getting to know another person to see what kind of relationship you're going to have. Sometimes relationships that begin as friendships turn into more and are some of the best long-term relationships. But that is different than having clear designs on someone and deceiving them long-term while you have another agenda. Certainly, you don't have to put all of your cards on the table very early when you have a crush on a person. But devious designs and appropriate shrewdness are two very different things. Don't act like a friend that you are not. The best way to tell is to ask yourself, what will happen if this does not end like I desire? If you can honestly say that you will be very happy continuing to be friends and will love the person as a friend, then you are being honest. If you say, if they do not want me back like I want them, I do not care about being friends at all, then your friendship is a scam. Only you know for sure. Deception about other people. Sometimes people deceive each other about the nature of other people in their lives. They may act like someone is just a friend when there is more of a history or more in the present than is being said. I was working with a man who was trying to figure out his relationship with a woman he was dating, and he continued to have a funny feeling that something was wrong. It seemed that she was just a little too connected to her work. He had no problem with her loving her job, but there was something strange about her relationship with her boss. He did not think that she was dating him or having any kind of illicit thing going on with him, but he still got a funny feeling about her work and her connection with her boss. Finally, he found out that his girlfriend had once been engaged to her boss, and there was still some sort of continuing tie between them. But as far as he had known, it was strictly a work relationship. She had misled him. He felt horribly deceived, and from there the relationship went downhill. It did not falter because she worked with a former boyfriend, but because she had not been clear about the nature of her former relationship with her boss. He could sense some sort of tie that she was not owning up to. Later, when some other issues came up where she had not been clear with him, the relationship died. If she had not been deceptive about the former boyfriend, the later issues would not have been a big deal. But once a pattern of deception has begun, trust is difficult to reestablish. A footnote, she soon was back with the former boyfriend. I told my client I thought he was lucky to have escaped her. Deception about who you are. In a chapter about honesty, it is really important to remember that you will have a good relationship to the degree that you are able to be clear and honest about everything. If you like a certain kind of music, church, movie or activity, say so. If you don't want to go to a certain kind of event or outing, be honest. That does not mean that you cannot die to your own wishes to please someone else, but it does mean that you are not afraid to be yourself. Otherwise, the person will think you are different than you are, and there will be trouble later. In addition, compliant people have a habit of attracting controlling, self-centered people anyway, and you do not want to do that. Be honest. Have some differences, and enjoy the trip. Deception about facts. There are people who tell lies not about feelings, relationships, or personal preferences, but about reality itself. Be careful of the following factual lies. Lying about whereabouts. Lying about finances. Lying about substance abuse. Lying about seeing or being with someone else. Lying about their past. Lying about their achievements, or other facts. Whenever you catch the person you are dating in any kind of lie, see that as a character issue that you should take as a very solemn warning. Lying about reality places your relationship on a very shaky foundation. Deception about hurt and conflict. We're assuming that you're going to tell the truth about the areas just mentioned, right? It is the other person you have to watch out for. But this section is especially for you, because if you lie in this area, you have no hope of finding out what kind of person you're really dating. One of the most important things that you can do in a dating relationship that is getting anywhere near serious is to be honest about hurt and conflict. If you're dating someone and there is a problem in some way that he or she has treated you or some hurt that you have suffered, you must be honest. There are two important reasons you need to be honest about conflict. One, being honest resolves the hurt or the conflict. And two, when you are honest, how the other person responds tells you whether a real, long-term, satisfactory relationship is possible. If you are hurt in some way, bring it up. Don't harbor bitter feelings. Or, if there is something that the other person has done that you do not like, or goes against your values or is wrong, it must be discussed. If you don't, you're building a relationship on a false sense of security and closeness, and it's possible that your feelings will be confused by hurt and fear. A lot is lost in not finding out who the other person is and where the relationship could really go if one or both people are not facing hurt and conflict directly. In reality, a conflict-free relationship is probably a shallow relationship. Second, you need to find out if the person you're with is capable of dealing with conflict and hurt directly. The Bible and all relationship research is very clear on this issue. People who can handle confrontation and feedback are the ones who can make relationships work. You must find out now, before it's too late, if the person you're with is someone you can talk to. If you get serious with someone who cannot take feedback about hurt or conflict, then you are headed for a lifetime of aloneness, resentment, and perhaps even abuse. Proverbs puts it well about a person who cannot take confrontation. Do not rebuke a mocker, or he will hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. Proverbs 9:8. A mocker resents correction. He will not consult the wise. Proverbs 15:12. You need to know if you're in a relationship with someone who is going to be defensive when you bring up hurt or conflict, or if you are with someone who is going to be able to listen, learn, and respond. If you don't deal with conflict now, and the relationship gets serious, then you've bought yourself a world of trouble. Honesty over hurt and conflict creates intimacy, and it also divides people into the wise and the foolish. But being honest is totally up to you. What the person you are dating does, you cannot control. But you can decide what kind of person you are going to be. And as a result, you will also be deciding what kind of person you are going to be with. Two types of liars. Why do people lie, and what can you do about it? In our opinion, there are really two categories of liars. First, there are liars who lie out of shame, guilt, fear of conflict or loss of love, and other fears. They are the ones who lie when it would be a lot easier to tell the truth. They want to be honest, but for one reason or another, cannot quite pull it off. They fear the other person's anger or loss of love. The second category are liars who lie as a way of operating and deceive others for their own selfish ends. There is no fear or defensiveness involved, just plain old lying for love of self. You'll have to ask yourself if you want to take the risk and do the work if you're with the first type. There are people in the first category who have never had a relationship where they felt safe enough to be honest, and they tend to still be hiding. So they lie to preserve love, or preserve the relationship, or avoid being caught in something because of guilt or shame. They're not really dangerous, evil characters, and sometimes, when they find someone safe, they learn to tell the truth. This is a risk that some people want to take after finding out that deception has occurred. They hope that the person will be redeemed by the grace and love that they offer, and will shoot straight with them from then on. While we would not automatically recommend continuing a dating relationship with this kind of person, sometimes there is a good outcome. So we do not want to make a rigid rule. But our feeling is that dating is not a place for you to rehabilitate people. Rehabilitation should occur in that person's counseling, recovery, discipleship, or some other context. For one thing, dating can become serious when your heart gets involved, and it may even lead to marriage. Just because the person is lying out of fear does not make it acceptable, and serious devastation can occur even with fearful liars. No matter what the reason, lying destroys. By and large, the best policy is to stay away from those who lie for any reason. We think you should spend your time and heart on honest people. It is often too risky from our perspective to get involved with a fearful liar. If the person gets better and comes back repentant, that is one thing. But you should not think that you're going to be the one who changes him or her if defensive lying is an ongoing pattern. There are some people who do this on occasion and confess it, and probably can be trusted over the long haul. But patterns of this type are problematic. Whatever you decide to do, whether you stick in there or not, make sure that you don't go further until the lying issue is forever and certainly in the past. Remember the words of the wise instructor: do not go on to other issues until the lying is solved. The second kind of liar is a definite no-go. Tell him or her goodbye and save yourself a lot of heartache. Perpetual liars are not ready for a relationship, no matter how much you are attracted to him or her. Run, run, run. Truth, the essential boundary. We believe that truthfulness is the basis for almost everything. You should have an absolute zero-tolerance policy when